This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross and Dr. Melissa Rice, you have to be pretty excited.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited, and I'm more than anything, I'm relieved that we have a robot on Mars.
Dr. Melissa Rice is a professor of geology at Western Washington University. You've been involved in all three of these Mars rover missions, and your job is to do what exactly?
Well, I have a couple of roles on this mission. I'm part of the MASCAM-Z team. MASCAM-Z are the two eyes on top of the rover's mast. These are the scientific cameras that are going to allow us to zoom into things on the distant horizon and take panoramic color images. I'm going to be part of that team operating the science cameras on the surface of Mars. Mm-hmm. And I have another role, which is called the long-term planner. So I'm part of a small group that herds the cats, if you will. We help the science team, which is 450 scientists working on this mission, we help direct the discussions that the team needs to have in order to make big decisions about where the rover is going to drive and what rocks it's going to drill into.
Well, let's talk about geology, because it landed in a dry lake bed, essentially. And the idea is that that is the most likely place where you'd find indications of past life forms. So tell me about this region, why it was chosen.
We chose this spot, Jezero Crater, exactly for that reason, because it looks like this was the spot where there was, at some point in Mars's history, a big lake filled with water. And there's a big river valley flowing into this ancient crater lake. It's dry now, but it looks like somewhere between 3.5 and 4 billion years ago, this would have been a place where a river was bringing water and sediments into a lake and building a big river delta, something like the Mississippi Delta, right there in the middle of Jezero Crater. We've landed right next to that delta, and we're going to be driving up to it and studying those rocks.
Okay, so what would life look like? What would be the indicators?
We're not looking for little green men. We don't expect to see a dinosaur bone sticking up out of the ground. What we're looking for when we look for life on Mars is evidence for ancient microbes. The period in Mars's history when Mars would have been habitable, when there could have been life swimming around in these lakes, was a relatively short period. And so if life did arise on Mars, it didn't have that much time to evolve into multicellular organisms and vegetation and animals and life as we know it on Earth. So what we're looking for is evidence for the very primitive life, single cell microorganisms, and there might be evidence for organic molecules associated with those organisms, minerals that those organisms might have produced, or evidence for fossils at the microscopic scale entombed in these rocks.
So are we talking about microbes made up of the same kind of DNA we have here on Earth, or would it be a different kind?
Well, we don't know. We'll be looking for organic molecules that we know make up life here on Earth. And we'll be looking eventually, once we get those rocks back here to Earth, we can look for things like DNA and carbon-based life forms. But, you know, this is an alien planet. We might be looking at life not as we know it, but life as we don't know it. And then it's going to be really hard for us to determine whether that is evidence for life if it's a form of life that we've never seen before.
So here's the other, perhaps touchier question. You're bringing this unknown substance back to Earth from an alien planet at a time when we're in a pandemic and people are really creeped out by any little fragments of any possible life form that may be floating around. I assume you have a rock solid sterility code at your lab.
Oh, absolutely. And these rocks aren't coming into my lab. These rocks, well, first of all, these rocks will be returned to Earth on a long timeline. Perseverance is really just laying the groundwork. It's going to be identifying the rocks that it wants to collect, drilling into those rocks, extracting sample cores, putting them into little sample tubes, hermetically sealing those tubes, and then leaving them on the surface of Mars. It's going to take another mission to follow up. That mission will launch no earlier than 2026. It will go to Mars, pick up those samples, and then launch them away from Mars into orbit. And it's going to take a third mission to go back to Mars into orbit, grab those samples from space, from orbit around Mars, and bring them all the way back to Earth.
Wow.
That whole thing is going to take 10 years. So we have some time to figure this out. And we are thinking in advance about how to protect the Earth from contamination from anything we bring back. And there will be very stringent laboratory protocols used. And we're also thinking very hard about how to protect these precious samples that we're bringing back from Mars so that they don't get contaminated with Earth life. If we find evidence for something biogenic, something indicating life in those Mars rocks, we want to make sure that we're not just detecting our own contaminations. So it's a two-way planetary protection that we're working with here. But we have, again, 10 years to work out all of those fine details.
And long term, as a geologist, are you strictly focused on finding the existence of life, or are you also talking about the possibility of mining the raw materials to actually, for example, create oxygen and rocket fuel so you can start actually launching rockets from Mars to even more distant places?
That's another exciting thing that this mission is going to do. It's going to help pave the way for eventual human exploration. And there will be an instrument on board the rover called MOXIE that's going to test a way of creating breathable oxygen from Mars's atmosphere. It's going to suck in carbon dioxide from Mars's air and then convert that into breathable oxygen. And molecular oxygen is also something that can be used for rocket fuel. So this might be a way for a robot to go to Mars ahead of the human missions. Maybe we send it there a couple of months before humans arrive, and it can sit there on the surface, taking Mars air and converting it into breathable oxygen and converting it into rocket fuel so that when the humans arrive, their air tanks are full and ready to go. They don't have to bring all of their oxygen with them. And their fuel tanks for the return trip home are also filled up and ready to go.
Wait a second. If you've got a gizmo that can take CO2 and turn it into breathable oxygen, we need to set those things up right here, don't we?
We certainly could use some help here on Earth removing that additional CO2 from our atmosphere. But where we're talking about, the scales are so much different. It would be another thing altogether to try and do that on a planetary scale. We're talking about keeping just a couple human beings alive for a couple of years.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds really exciting. And just watching the people at JPL holding their breath and then waiting, 22 minutes to get the signal back saying that everything was fine. That was quite a moment.
Oh, yeah. Just so much tension. And then to see the room erupt once they got the word that touchdown was soft and successful. Whew. What a day.
Dr. Melissa Rice is a professor of geology at Western Washington University. What an exciting time. Congratulations on being part of this very successful mission so far.
Thank you so much.
And there's more with Dr. Rice on our latest Ross File, which is available now wherever you get podcasts. Just Google Ross File and KIRO.